We can now count the hours to the first caucus with us, standing for United States of America, because that's where we are, even though we broadcast all over the world. We welcome our listeners from Australia to maybe nobody in the North Pole, but in case you're listening, Santa, ho, 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 and thank you for all the presents that you didn't get for me a few weeks ago. This is a fine mid-morning coffee break with Adam, that's I, being my usual wise-cracking, sarcastic, and sometimes facetious and argumentative self, and my brother and broadcasting partner in crime, master of the microphone from the Miami area, a lot of M's, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, although we now call him Dr.
Good morning.
Dr. Ronald L. Feynperson, because we want to be politically correct, or at least lampoon political correctness, which is even more fun. And how are you today, Ron, from warm and sunny Florida, as we speak to you from wintry Ohio?
Well, it's not as warm and sunny as it should be. It was only in the 50s, so it's pretty, you know, but it's going up, but it's pretty chilly, yeah.
Yeah, I heard a few days ago you had a wind chill warning, wind chills in the 20s. Did you guys survive?
Yes.
Did you all turn into polar bears and have to buy parkas and scarves, or did you make it through the relative coldness out there in the southern
Florida? Well, I survived, but other than it being a work, of course I had to wear pants. I wore pants even at home, and I had a jacket when I went out, yeah, because it was pretty cold. And once you're living down here, it feels even colder when it gets a little cold here.
I know you don't shop at Walmart. We've talked about that before. So whatever store you shop at, do they sell jackets, or can you really get nothing other than Bermuda shorts and muscle shirts and other summer gear?
Well, Publix, PBLIX, is our supermarket, major supermarket. I don't know if they sell jackets, but I have jackets, but I never have to wear it much. But I had to wear a jacket, and I had to wear pants going shopping, not just shorts. That's the difference. Okay. But that's one of the prices of living in South Florida.
I was thinking you shopped naked there for a minute. You said you had to wear pants. Okay, now I finally figured it out. You had to wear long pants.
I also wear a shirt.
Okay. I wasn't quite sure what that was about.
But pants and socks and shoes. They in fact require that you have to wear shoes. I think that's so funny. Must wear shoes. They don't say you have to wear other things. They always talk about have to wear shoes.
Yeah, it says no shoes, no shirt, no service. It doesn't say no pants, no service. I never quite understood that.
That's what's funny about it. Yes.
I mean, if you're a female or you're a Scotsman, you could wear a skirt, you know, or a kilt. I guess that's kind of like wearing pants or wearing a leg wear of some kind. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been to South Florida in so long, I kind of forgot what the garb was and what they might sell at the neighborhood discount department store. But thank you for letting us in on a bit of a cultural informational tidbit there. We talk every yes. Monday between about 13 after 10 in the a.m. Eastern time and 11. We rebroadcast the show several times during the week because it's so good. Anyway, the caucus is coming up, Ron. We can now count the hours until the first one. And it seems like the Bernie Sanders supporters seem to think he's going to run away with this, run away with the first caucus and just become the next president of the United States of America. And as I've told you, the chance of that happening is about the same as Karen Pence becoming Mrs. America one day, because she's a Mrs. And, of course, the Grand Marshal of the Gay Pride Parade the next day. Obviously, that chance isn't very good, regardless of what it might look like now. Yes, I would expect Sanders to win a caucus or primary, maybe a few of them, maybe even in a relatively large state. That wouldn't surprise me. But I don't see him as winning the nomination. And if he were to go against Donald...
No, I don't either. But it is indicated that he's ahead in New Hampshire as well. And Warren, you know, who's closest to his views, has really slipped. And I'm trying to figure out why is she slipping and he's gaining. You know, is it a woman-man issue? I'm wondering. I just can't figure out why she's doing better than him.
Although the debates would be very amusing if it were Bernie Sanders against Donald Trump. I mean, you talk about funny. It would be more giggles than have come out of my mouth probably since I came out of the womb. But that's probably not going to happen either. It also means it would be an assured victory for Donald. There is no way that Bernie could ever possibly beat Trump. You have a lot of the independents and fence sitters like myself. It's a no-brainer. Now, believe me, there are many things about Donald Trump that I find absolutely repulsive. We could probably discuss about his participating in a march I would say it's against women's rights, against the right to have an abortion. Again, I'm against abortion. I'm for choice, same way that Ron feels. I don't want to make it sound like I think abortion
is... I'm pro-choice, not pro-abortion, right. But I don't think if you should deny a woman right. the right. Yes.
It's not a form of birth control, and it's a, I would say, mean thing to do. However, doesn't mean that it should be illegal. It is a keep your laws off my body kind of a situation. In addition, I don't think the president should be participating in a march. Now, I would also say a president shouldn't be participating in a march for abortion rights, even though abortion from Roe v. Wade is legal in this country. I don't think that he or she should be involved. That isn't really an appropriate thing for a president to do. So it goes both ways. But I would agree that if the march is something which says we need to change a law which exists in our great country, it's worse. But you would agree, Ron, either way, it's not something that I think a sitting president, not a candidate or a former president, that's different. I don't think a sitting president should really get involved in that stuff. You want to support the country, not especially with the case of a sensitive issue, not one issue or the other, especially if it's something going contrary to our laws. And that would be on a list of things about Donald Trump that I don't like. That would be on the repulsive side because I find that very objectionable. There are things I don't like a little bit. For example, I don't agree we should raise the smoking and tobacco and vaping age to 21. In fact, I think it should be 16 like it is in some areas, or not even have an age at all. I think we have other problems to worry about.
16 anyway. Where is that? Do you know where it is?
In Europe. I can look up the countries, but I know,
Europe, okay.
I know in Europe things are much more liberal in that direction. In addition, even if you say the age is 18, it might not be enforced. I remember before they really started enforcing tobacco ages, you could be 12 and buy cigarettes. They wouldn't bother, and they wouldn't prosecute. Then they started enforcing it at 18.
That should not be happening, though.
Right, and now it's 21 and being strictly enforced. So I feel rather strongly about that. I think at 18 you are an adult. I've always been very against raising the drinking age, and again, I would have no problem lowering it to 14 or 16, which it is in some countries. 18 to me would be the highest possible age it should be, as that's the age that you're an adult. Doesn't mean you're at full maturity. There are people that are 60 years old that are still growing up, but we do have to set up a guideline somewhere. So the tobacco, vaping, smoking age of 21 is one thing about Donald Trump I definitely don't like. I mean, I do like that, you know, he's very public and proud. He's never smoked. He doesn't drink. He doesn't use drugs. Well, that's actually very good, although, well, some cases drugs are legal, but drinking and smoking are legal.
Well, the rumor is that he does use prescription drugs. The way he behaves sometimes, I think he is on some prescription drugs, but he doesn't tell
it. It is ironic. You know, this is getting off on a tangent, but this really does lead to an interesting discussion, Ron. Okay, Donald Trump doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. I'll agree with that. You know, I drink, you know, not a lot, but I do enjoy a beer every now and then. Ron maybe drinks like once a year on New Year's Eve or your birthday or some other occasion. However, I don't even like fast food. I don't even really like hamburgers. I'd rather have a fruit salad or something nutritious but with calories. I mean, the low-fat ice cream or taco or something. Plus, you know me, I'm addicted to the gym, and I'm famous for listening to this show and other shows or even calling Scott Spears during my workouts. I don't think Donald Trump lifts anything other than his hamburger. He doesn't seem like he exercises very much. There is some exercise in golf.
Well, the golf club he uses, though.
But it's not
the golf club.
It's really not quite like going to the gym or playing basketball. I mean, Obama played basketball. He was certainly in very good shape. Gerald Ford was a star football player. So we've had presidents who have been athletic and been in good shape. Yes, it's good that Donald Trump doesn't smoke or drink. But honestly, I think if he smoked a pack a day, and if he had a beer once in a while, but exercised and lost about 60 pounds, he would be in better shape. You know, compare it to Obama. I think Obama did drink beer. Remember that little meeting with the world leaders where they all drank beer? And it's, you know, well known Obama either used to smoke or he still smokes. I mean, I don't think he ever smoked that much, but he's obviously in very good shape, and he does play basketball. I mean, he walks.
Well, his wife really got on him to stop smoking at one point. I know that.
Well, I think he was smoking cigarettes and probably sneaking them behind the White House. Honestly, Ron, I don't even care if he smokes. You know what? As I've said, being president's a pretty stressful job. I would smoke, too, if I were president. I'd probably go crazy. But honestly, I don't really even think it's a big deal. But I think you would agree, Ron, that if Donald Trump did have a beer once in a while, they'd go outside the grounds and puff down a cigar. I mean, like Bill Clinton, you know, another rather athletic president who enjoyed a smoke or two, but didn't have as many hamburgers or fried chicken or whatever he eats that is obviously full of cholesterol and calories. And if he lost about 60 pounds, he would probably be in better shape. So just a few ironies about these people.
Well, but physical. Mental, I'm not sure it matters. I think his mental shape is not good, the president's, whether he was in good physical shape or not.
You know,
yeah.
And bottom line, Ron, one thing that is attractive about Trump, again, even something that his biggest supporters will say, and I find this attractive about him, he is a character, he's charismatic in his own way, he's kind of delightfully crazy, and he does these things that are out there, including the Iranian assassination that we've discussed multiple times and probably will touch on today. And you never quite know what's coming with the guy. And he does put excitement into the office. And as I've said, he has caused people, myself included, and yourself, I mean, a little bit, because you'd be interested in presidents regardless of how boring the president would be. It's caused people to take an interest in the presidency, in our government, in our laws, in our history. And that's wonderful. It's kind of an unusual way to do it. But whatever needs to be done is we need to be educated about where we live. And that is a positive thing. It's just he has an unusual way of doing it. And I would also add that Sanders...
Well, his anti-Trump is Calvin Coolidge, one of the most boring presidents in modern
times. Yeah, and you know, what's the difference there? You have Coolidge, he was not exciting. It was totally blasé. It's like, well, I would find watching a marathon of the world's most boring soap opera more interesting than having to follow Silent Cal. And yet you have Donald Trump, and, you know, whether you love him or hate him, or, you know, me, you're kind of mixed. It's, well, he's just probably the most interesting, most unusual president ever. And it's really caused me to take an interest in where I live and get involved and decide what my opinions are on some of these issues. And again, not afraid to say there are things about the guy that I find absolutely repulsive. Again, I call it March Against Women's Rights is what I call it. That is repulsive. And in the I disagree, but I wouldn't say I'm repulsed, would be the 21-year-old tobacco and smoking and vaping age, which, first of all, I think he has better things to worry about, more important things to worry about, like the economy, like the Middle East, healthcare. And I don't agree with how he feels. And if Donald Trump were so interested in people's health, he would set a good example. Yes, I'm nice he doesn't smoke. Drinking in moderation arguably is good for you, so I wouldn't even count that. But I think he should stop making the fast food places his main place to patronize when it comes to dining. He should encourage people to eat healthy. And now we'll give a nod to Michelle Obama. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of hers in the world, but she was big on eating healthy. We talked last week about the school lunches, where it's now okay to have French fries and other things that really, if at all, should be eaten in moderation versus the healthy food that Michelle Obama lobbied for and was successful. So a nod there to Michelle and an anti-nod against Donald. And, you know, maybe the one thing, Rod, about having presidents who could hit their 80th birthday in office is if you eat healthy and live healthy, you'll make it to 80 and you can still run the biggest, you know, most, well, biggest is kind of a relative word, but the most powerful country in the world. You know, Joe Biden has that kind of great grandpa look to him, but he certainly looks healthy. His body is definitely in good shape. And
well, Bernie also looks healthy as far as looking at him, despite his heart attack he had recently. He's not overweight, so he's also in good shape in that regard.
Relatively, if you can just don't mind looking at the guy, because he really isn't much in that appearance department, which also, I guess, would be an interesting topic. You know, does looks affect the presidency? And we joke about Melania Trump, Nikki Haley, Amy Klobuchar, to an extent, Kamala Harris, you know, decent-looking women
who seem to
get better looking, or at least stay good looking with age, and that is important because you are projecting an image. And you know, Donald Trump.
Well, I think Amy Klobuchar, even during this impeachment trial, has been on after, you know, doing the breaks on MSNBC and CNN, and she looks and sounds better than ever to me. She really does.
Yeah,
and there are some people who think she might be the dark horse who could even win Iowa. She's right next door. Soda, but not the polls say Sanders.
She is interesting because she is a moderate and, as almost everybody agrees, an extreme left, and that would be Sanders and Warren. They're not going to win. That's not what we want in this country. We do tend toward the middle. Now, of course, Canada has a very left prime minister, and prime minister is kind of like the president, but Canada is a little bit different, and Justin Trudeau is the son of Pierre Trudeau, whom, as I recall, was a moderate conservative. They're very different in their political leanings. And
well, he was the Liberal Party, as they call it, but he was not extreme, but it was called the Liberal Party.
Yeah. My understanding, too, is both parties historically kind of tend toward the middle. They don't have this divisiveness we have now, and we have a huge divisiveness here in the colonies, so to speak. But obviously, Justin is far to the left of his father, regardless of what party they might affiliate with. And it certainly strained the relations between these two countries. As Donald Trump, again, it's kind of hard to define his politics, and he isn't necessarily a extreme conservative, but there are certainly some major differences between the two, and probably also a few jokes that Trudeau is much better looking and certainly much younger than Donald Trump. That's something on the lighter
side.
Donald
Trump years ago was handsome. I don't call him good looking now, but when he was young, he looked good.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's now in his 70s. I was going to mention, if Sanders wins, he would be 80 years old after 7.5 months in office, sooner than Joe Biden or Michael Bloomberg, who I think in the case of Bloomberg is 5 months younger than Bernie, and he's 14 months and Joe was 14 months younger than Bernie. So, I mean, Bernie would be 80 in September of 2021. And I still worry about somebody, any of them in their 80s, you know, whether they'd be fit to govern. That's what I worry about.
But we do caution the Bernie supporters. Don't count your chickens before they hatch, as my mama would say. Don't get too excited. Yes, he is showing promise. He may win a primary caucus or two or three or four, but we don't expect him to be the nominee. And we certainly don't think he can ever beat Donald. And the independents like myself are likely to vote for Donald. Doesn't mean they're not going to hold their nose while doing it. But the thought of having that man that I consider to be almost a communist in office, not to mention that he's a terrible public speaker. He's very annoying. Even too old, I don't really mind. I'm not going to be hypocritical because I like Biden and they're about the same age.
3 months apart, actually.
Yeah. I mean, Biden, despite him being kind of too laid back in nature, certainly compared to the rather hyperactive, high-strung Donald Trump, and that he sometimes seems a bit out of it. I think inside it's still the same passion and feistiness that we saw in Joe Biden when he was half his current age. He just has a more mellow way of expressing it. And
yeah, I wanted to say, in the last couple of weeks, he seems more stable when he's been interviewed. He was on MSNBC, sounded very good, and he looks better. I think he may have had some, you know, he has his ups and downs. I just hope his ups stay up and the downs disappear, because I am worried about him competing with him in a debate, and whether he should be able to do very well, but you have to wonder, you know.
Ron, I know we don't agree on my designating Sanders as a borderline communist. We agree he's extremely to the left. We would agree. I think you would agree he is a socialist. This democratic socialism thing, I don't believe that.
And he's not really a Democrat. He joins the Democrats when he's running for office. Otherwise, he really says he's an independent. So he's not a good party player, I guess you'd say, which makes many people say that if he is a serious contender, the Democratic convention may be divided, and it could be like 1968 mess, you know, between Humphrey and Robert Kennedy. Well, he wasn't alive at the time, but Humphrey and Eugene McCarthy and George McGovern, and that would not be good for the Democrats to have a split convention.
Now, Ron, we would agree not just that Sanders is too far to the left. How we designate him might be different, but we also would agree he's not a good speaker. He talks with his hands too much. That voice is very annoying. And the charisma issue is missing with him. Now, we talk about Sherrod Brown, for example. Voice is annoying, not a lot of charisma, and not really the best-looking character out there either, although at least he combs his hair, unlike Sanders. But there are so many good things about Sherrod Brown that would make him a good vice president, and I would support him for president also. He's a bit too liberal, but not too much. And he's experienced enough, he knows what to say and when to compromise, when to work with people. I think we would also agree, Ron, that like Donald Trump, you know, ironically, a Trump presidency is a lot like what a Sanders presidency would be. Sanders wouldn't work well with either party, just like Trump doesn't.
Well, he'd be the anti-Trump on the other side. That's the thing I worry about. He'd get nothing done, and he'd be very confrontational, just like Trump. That's the problem.
Right,
on
it's
the
almost
other
like
side,
they would be alike, and, you know, politics making strange bedfellows. They would be alike in some ways, and they would be different in others. Certainly, in viewpoints, they'd be different. But in terms of not playing well with others, they would be almost identical.
Temperament, yeah.
Temperament, yeah.
Kind of
how
now,
things
are. I want to ask you, just sort of, you mentioned Sherrod Brown. What if Sanders does win the nomination and he picks Sherrod Brown as his running mate? How would that make you feel?
It would make me feel like I'd be making an easy decision as to whom to vote for.
Even though Sherrod Brown is on the ticket, you still would not be able to consider voting, huh?
Correct. Sanders would still be the president. I would not.
Ohio, and
I will not vote for someone who is, well, I will not vote for someone whom I consider to be almost a communist. And remember, Sanders in the 70s did say he supported government control of industry and business. And if I'm not mistaken, because I'm majored in chemistry, not government, that is communism. There are different levels of communism, but that is a communist philosophy. Now, that was a while back, but candidates are being called on things they've said in the past. And I don't really think it's any different. A lot of people say, well, what's the difference between socialism and communism? Communism forces you to do it. It kind of takes away your assets. And socialism allows some liberties. And I kind of wonder which end of that Sanders is. And I see him on the communist end of socialism, not the Northern European end of it. The Northern European government system, yes, it has its valid points and results, but it's not going to work here. We have a different kind of economy, different kind of country. And what Sanders wants to do, which would never happen anyway, because it would never be supported, is not going to be a reality. As I've said on Facebook, if he could really just charge everybody after a plateau is reached, 4% tax to provide universal health care, I'd be the first person to vote for him. But that's not going to happen. It's much more than 4%, and it's much more complicated. He makes these promises, and I think he even knows he's lying through his teeth, and his way of expressing them is poor. And the way of expressing them, the lack of charisma, that would also further hinder his ability to get along with both parties. I mean, like Trump, he's not a Democrat, he's a Republican. He marches to the beat of a different drummer. And none of this stuff would ever happen. All that would happen is an incredible rise in taxes and a total tumbling of the economy. And right now, the economy under Donald is pretty good. Whether it is due to rich people getting tax breaks, well, that's up for debate. I would agree slightly, but I don't agree as much as Ron does. But, you know, Ron and I can agree to shake hands and be friends and discuss things like mature adults and move on. But bottom line is, Ron, the way Sanders communicates, the way that he's not really aligned with the general philosophies of either party, and that he is just so argumentative and grouchy, as you've said, and I agree with, that would really be a hindrance to anything getting done during a Sanders presidency, which could be quite disastrous, especially when you have a president who has these extreme ideas and extreme policies that he'd like to get passed. But that pretty much sum it up. I think we can agree 100% on that one.
Yes. I wanted to mention that the Des Moines Register just yesterday endorsed Warren, even though she's slipping in the polls there. Isn't that interesting?
Well, Klobuchar is from neighboring Minnesota.
Fine, but it's just a newspaper, but still, they endorsed Warren over Klobuchar, Biden, and Buttigieg, and everybody. I'm surprised.
Yeah. You wrote in your blog, now Ron does publish the blog, that we encourage our listeners to peruse, bookmark, and even turn into a paper airplane if you don't agree with it. And it's called the ProgressiveProfessor.com. The paper airplane reminds me of something else we saw online, so don't mind me if I start giggling. Anyway, TheProgressiveProfessor.com, explaining current events, and sometimes it's a nonpartisan view of historical tidbits, presidential trivia, and other items of interest. Of course, right now, the two main topics are the caucuses coming up, the election in general, and, of course, the impeachment. Of course, how could we not discuss the impeachment? Now, over the weekend, Ron, you wrote about Iowa. You're saying it's not totally representative of the nation and its heavily white population, and hopefully will not be the first contest in future presidential elections. But there's no question that whoever ends up on top 10 days from now will have a boost that might be a major factor in that person winning the Democratic presidential nomination to run against the most dangerous president in American history. Nice long sentence. So, Iowa, don't take it at face value. Yes, it's good if you're a candidate, if you win a caucus or primary, especially the first one. But as my mama said again, don't count your chickens until they hatch. On January 24th, last Friday, Ron, you write another article with some extremes and descriptive adjectives, despicable, disgraceful behavior by Lindsey Graham. I guess we could say Lindsey Graham is crackers. Mitch McConnell. You're supposed to laugh at that one, Ron. You know, Graham crackers.
yes.
Marsha Blackburn. Rand Paul. Not to be confused with Ron Paul, because at one time I thought they were the same person. In midst of impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Ironically, the political philosophies of Rand Paul and Ron Paul are very different, despite their names being similar. So we do mention that. The first week of the Donald Trump impeachment trial has shown despicable, disgraceful behavior by Republican senators, including Graham, McConnell, Blackburn, and Rand Paul, among others. Graham has made it clear he's more concerned about having unlimited presidential power than the Constitution, but when a Democrat is president again, he will quickly reverse course. And one of your favorite senators from nearby Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn, has attacked one of the impeachment witnesses, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, for having testified and accusing him of a lack of patriotism and outrageous charge. These Republicans and really all of the party in Congress is making themselves a disgrace to the history and traditions of the party of Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, and Dwight David Eisenhower. So again, a lot of divisiveness, a lot of siding with your own party, and a lot of just crazy stuff going on. And whether it is distracting us from all the, I guess, excitement, so to speak, of the primary, all the things going on in Iran, and this new coronavirus, something else that's been in the news, yet we don't know.
Oh my gosh.
But these senators are, they're really at each other's throats, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. Bottom line is, with Donald Trump, and we would see this at least this much if Sanders were to be president, people just aren't getting along. You have us versus them. Even some Republicans aren't getting along with each other. You know, we have the different levels of Democrats, the traditional moderate Democrats like Biden and Klobuchar, and the extreme ones like, again, Sanders and Warren. It's great if you like to read the National Enquirer or listen to talk shows and stations like WWGH, but we really need to realize we're on the same team and get in the business of running this great country. And it seems like we are really going farther and farther away from that. Yes, it's funny, but it's getting kind of out of hand. And I think you would agree, Ron, we're not really going to see much of a change in that. It's going to continue to get divisive. Even if Donald Trump doesn't serve a second term, the after effects of all these goings on will be with us for a very, very long time. Would you?
No, actually, I'm thinking that if Sanders was to win, the Republicans probably would start impeachment charges almost immediately, even as he just began. And Joe Biden, because of this whole story about his son Hunter, the Republicans probably would start impeachment charges against Joe Biden as well. So I have a feeling we're going to see more of this impeachment kind of talk very soon. Maybe not with Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar. But even with Warren, I bet it would happen. It's just a scary situation. And if Bloomberg came in, you know, because he's spending $240 million, who knows, you know, what they could come up with, you know. So it's going to be a very divisive 2020s, much more than the boring 1920s.
Yeah. Are we kind of getting obsessed with impeachment in this country? Is that kind of what you're saying?
It could be, because I think the Republicans would say, you did this to our guy, and especially if it's Sanders, but even Joe Biden, because of it, trying to bring him into this trial and his son. I could see for those two particularly, there might be a movement if he either gets elected to impeach them. Not that it'll go anywhere. It's not going to lead to conviction.
Now,
just going through the whole process.
Just a generation ago, we had the impeachment of Bill Clinton, you know, for reasons that I think our listeners know about. Now we have the impeachment of Donald Trump. It's like, is it every generation now, or is it every president they're going to challenge and try to impeach? God forbid, can we get back to just running this country? I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
No, unfortunately.
You also write about the people and the diversity thereof who are on this impeachment committee. I guess it's committee or group, whatever you want to call them. We have two who are Jewish, Adam Schiff. Of course, he's my favorite, plus his wife's name is Eve, which is quite cool. Nadler.
He is so great. He really is exceptional, yeah. I think. I'm very proud of him. All of them, but particularly him, yes.
Two who are African-American, Jeffries and Demings. One who is Latina, Garcia. And three who are longtime veterans of the House, Nadler, Lofgren, and the aforementioned Adam Schiff. Three have served 3 years or less, Demings, Garcia, and Crow. Two each from...
Crow was really impressed. He's a freshman, yeah.
California, and that's not Sheryl Crow, I believe. That would be the congressperson Crow. Not the singer
Jason
Sheryl Crow.
Who was a war veteran. And then two each from California and New York. One each from Florida, Texas, and Colorado.
And the ages are very diverse, from 72 down to 40. So I think it's good to have a diverse committee. We want to represent all ethnicities, male and female, and all ages. So that's good. And we want to show, again, kind of like on a jury, because it essentially is a jury. We want to show something which is representative of our country. And I think that obviously is the case here. So again, Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. I want to bring up a news story, Ron, that I read a few days ago, and ask what you think about this. And we've touched on this topic a little bit. It's controversial and sensitive, but I think it's important because I find it to be ridiculous and getting ridiculouser. And more of this political correctness shoved in our face.
There's no such word.
Well, it's okay. Donald Trump makes up words, so do I. So ridiculouser.
Yeah.
And this is what happens when political correctness goes crazy and turns into offensiveness. Happens in Arizona. It's not about Sheriff Joe. Sorry to disappoint you. I know you like to talk about Sheriff Joe, but this is not about... I mean, indirectly it is, because it's about a law, and so he would be involved, I guess, in enforcing it to some extent, but...
Well, but he's no longer in office, though, of course.
Right.
Yeah, but
doesn't relate to Sheriff Joe, doesn't relate to Cactus, and doesn't even relate to spring training in Arizona, which, goodness sakes, is going to start in 2 to 3 weeks. That's amazing. Almost time for spring training as
baseball
we sit here.
Baseball season's coming sooner rather than later, yep.
And, you know, with my favorite team, the Reds...
What about the corruption in baseball,
yeah,
in the World
Well, we might talk about that with the Hall of Fame elections, if we have time to, because that's something else we're going to agree on. But it doesn't relate to spring training, doesn't relate to Cactus, doesn't relate to Sheriff Joe, except on an indirect level, because it is a law. Transgender girls and women would be barred from participating in sports on the team that aligns with their gender identity under a proposed Arizona law. It's announced by Republican Representative Nancy Bartow, again a few days ago, co-sponsored by 22 other Republican House members, and is the latest on a growing list of more than a dozen states that have bills focusing on transgender young people. The legislation only allows biological women or girls to play on female teams and requires a doctor's note in case they're not sure if someone is biologically female. Now, you know how I feel about this, Ron. I'm all for, as I said, keep your laws off my body, but I don't see that as applying here. And I'm all for freedom of expression. That's something we hold dear as Americans. However, I am strongly against the idea that a biologically male, let's say basketball player, because men are taller than women, other things being equal, not that there aren't women who are taller than I am, and I'm above average height. You know, you're a little on the short side, Ron, but you're still taller than the average woman. And there are women that are, you know, 6 feet or more. But in general, men, boys, are taller than girls and women, and men are also built differently. I think that's biology 101. I'm not going to explain that. I think we already know that. And I understand that if you take female hormones, it will change how your body works, how you would do in sports. But bottom line is you are still underneath a male, even if you want to express yourself as a female. And I do not believe at all. I have zero lenience on this, and I find the whole thing, this is repulsive to me, that a biological male will be able to compete in sports with biological females. And this is near and dear to me, Ron. As you know, my alma mater, Clarkson University, has the top Division I female hockey program in the United States. And also, the male hockey program is up there. I would be aggravated and offended and would understand that such a victory would be null and void, as far as I'm concerned, if a team that had a biological male playing as a female were to beat the Clarkson women's team. Would that even count? And conversely, I would not think it would be real. It would not count. It would not be valid if the Clarkson team had a biological male competing as a female. Obviously goes both ways. Now, would I be correct, Ron, in that you and I agree that in order to compete in competitive sports, and even to an extent in non-competitive, because there are divisions of men and women. If you are biologically male, regardless of how you express yourself, you should not be able to compete as a female. Would you agree with me on that, or are you not, don't feel quite as extreme as I do?
Competitive, would that include like kids in Little League, where it's very, it's not really anything other than kids having fun? I mean, I don't know.
Well,
what about kids at a younger age?
Well, Little League is interesting because it now allows girls to play with boys, which I think is great. I mean,
yeah.
Remember the Bad News Bears, the movie where the female player was better than a lot of the men. But let's take an extreme example. Again, something where there is an obvious difference between the average male and the average female, and that would be basketball. And again, there are women, you know, I'm slightly tall for a man, and there are women who are 6 inches taller than I am. But all other things being equal, the average height of somebody with X and Y chromosomes is approximately 5'9". For X and X chromosomes, again, a female is approximately 5'4", 5'5", if I'm not mistaken. Humans are getting a little taller, but there's a difference of about 4 or 5 inches. Do you think it's fair that a biological male should be able to play on a women's basketball team? It will include women's soccer, hockey, softball, etc. I feel very strongly about
that. I would have to say no. I would agree with you. The only thing, what about Little League? I'm saying, because Little League leads to Little League World Series. I'm trying to think of kids under 18. What about, you're talking about college. What about below college level, like
right.
When you're
well,
under 18?
I'm
not sure about that.
Now, in Little League, again, girls can play on the team with boys. I mean, I don't believe that people of Little League age should be taking hormones and be deciding that they're transgender. I don't think that they're ready yet. I'm not an expert on this.
But there are kids at 6 that their parents, you know, the boy would say, I feel like a girl, or vice versa, and and I think it's difficult. What does a parent do at that age when a kid says, I don't find what I am?
I think
I don't know.
The kids are doing is reading too much about people who think you just pick your gender, like you pick what kind of food you want to eat from the cafeteria. It's not quite that simple. And
it's complicated. It's a terrible thing to have to face if you have a kid who says that.
Yeah.
Thank God I didn't.
And I think that the transgender activists have gone absolutely wacko. And let me say that on the air, tape it, record it. And you know what? If someone calls me transphobic, I decided that's actually a compliment. Because if that means that I believe that women should be biological females to compete in sports or in some other way represent the female, that's fine with me. And again, I look at my alma mater, the female hockey team that I'm so proud of, you know, far and away, the number one program. I'd like to be sure that I know that every person on that team is a biological female. And again, everybody that they play is a biological female. And these are becoming laws going state by state. Something else which aggravates me, Ron, is the organizations supporting this are organizations that are against things that you and I are in favor of. Some conservative religious freedom group, Alliance Defending Freedom, is backing the measure.
Yeah.
And the article kind of implies that the ACLU is
like
against
religious extremists.
Now, I know politics makes strange bedfellows, but I'm offended that it's only the very conservative groups, whom I don't agree with on anything. Take abortion, for one thing. Other things related to freedoms that we hold dear as Americans, and the whole idea of keep your law off my body, that it's only these extreme right-wing groups that are going to go out and say we are in favor of this, and that the political correct police, the transgender activists, have just brainwashed everybody. And it's just disgusting. I have no other way to say it. I just can't believe that a logical person would ever feel this way. And I don't know what else to say, but I feel very strongly about this, and I guess you and I would agree. And again, call me transphobic.
Except I don't want to sign anything that signs me up with the right-wing religious extremists.
Right.
That's the only thing. I would not sign a statement with them, let's say.
Right.
I would tend to agree on that issue, but not want to league myself with them, is what I'm saying.
The Alliance Defending Freedom has filed a federal discrimination complaint on behalf of Connecticut girls who competed in track and field. The girls say the state's inclusive policy on transgender athletes has cost them top finishes and possibly college scholarships. That is very – what about wrestling, something related to strength? How about the danger of a biological man competing against a biological woman?
Yeah.
I understand that if you take hormones, it does change your body, but you still are a man inside, men of a higher muscle mass. And, you know, read your biology textbook, read your anatomy and physiology textbooks. They are built differently, hormones or no hormones. Plus the issue that hormones shouldn't have a place in sports. If you take them – with some exceptions, I don't think you should be able to compete at all. And that goes for women transitioning into men.
Yeah.
It goes both ways.
One thing is the Little League thing. If it's just Little League kids playing, it might be one thing, but if it's Little League World Series and they're 14 or 15, you don't want to have a person who is a, you know, who's the other gender competing. You know, I think it's a problem.
I think it's a nightmare.
Actually, we didn't discuss this before the call, but wow, this is a tough issue. And I agree with you, but I would not want to sign a statement with anybody on
correct.
The right wing.
And that's part of the politics make strange bedfellows, and that's an example.
Yeah.
And you can hear the rage in my voice, because that really is something that offends me greatly. We'll close off with another controversial topic, but not one that I think is going to invite me steaming like this one. We recently had the Hall of Fame election for Major League Baseball. Derek Jeter's election was not a surprise. And we have arguably the best Canadian player ever, Larry Walker, winning election, although it was very close. I actually was kind of surprised. My nephew, who's a tremendous baseball fan and Mets fan, pointed this out to me. I didn't realize how good Larry Walker's statistics were. His career average, his number of home runs, and he was an outstanding and rather underrated fielder. And so in looking at that and knowing how tough he was against the Reds and players that I liked when he played, there's no question he deserves election. He's not necessarily a first ballot player like Jeter or Nolan Ryan was, but I think he certainly deserves it, and I don't disagree with either of those choices. Another hot topic, and we talk about using substances, Ron, or two players that statistically have two of the best statistical records ever, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. They did not get elected because they were juiced. Would you agree with me, Ron, because you're also a baseball fan? As I said, we're looking forward to spring training starting in a few weeks. Would you agree that, yes, Derek Jeter and Larry Walker deserve election, and Barry Bonds probably should be in jail, but he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, and also Roger Clemens?
I would agree the two you mentioned should not be in the Hall of Fame, but the thing that's interesting is one voter voted against Derek Jeter has caused an uproar.
Yeah,
so
well,
he's not unanimous.
There has to be a rebel, and there were rumors about him cheating. They called him Derek Jeter. I'm not sure really what happened.
I never heard that one.
There is, again, some sentimental attachment. He played regionally for the Columbus Clippers and when they were a Yankees affiliate, and arguably the best player ever to put on a Clippers uniform. But, you know, great player. I remember during the draft, the Reds almost drafted him. They didn't. Probably should have, but hindsight is 20/20. And, again, Larry Walker, a great player. Not quite sure why he was slighted before, but he's in and joins Ferguson Jenkins and, in the future, Joey Votto, who's a likely Hall of Famer, as representatives of the great white North. And we congratulate these players, and I think you would agree, Roger Clemens and Sammy Sosa, also Barry Bonds, will never see the Hall of Fame. They don't deserve to be in. Of course, this also came up, Ron, because there are many people, an increasing number, who are supporting players like Bonds. What do you think about Pete Rose? I think you've said you think once he passes away, he would end up getting in.
I think he should be, but he's such an annoying person, at least his reputation. It'll probably be only after he passes away, yes. But I think I would support him being in the Hall of Fame, yes. Would you?
Without question. He wasn't a saint. You know, we've talked about Ty Cobb and some other players who definitely were not nice people.
Yeah.
Johnny Bench, I mean, he wasn't a mean guy. This wasn't the friendliest, most fan-friendly, or reporter-friendly player. But what he did on the field, he certainly was a first-ballot player. Roger Clemens wasn't known as the nicest guy out there, but that doesn't matter. It's the steroid use. And we have players that, like Gary Carter, who was known as a very nice guy. And I speak from my experience when I got an autograph and talked to him briefly during his last series, which he played in Wrigley Field as a Expo. I agree, one of the nicest guys ever to put on a uniform, and that affected his ability to get in, but I think by stats he deserves to be in anyway. So there are many things that affect a player's election. The player as a man is part of it, but bottom line is you're juiced, your statistics are meaningless, and you should never get in the Hall of Fame. Pete Rose, well, that's a tricky one. And I think, like many people, Ron, it's hard to say this. I mean, he's in his 70s. He still does the autograph circuit, still posts to social media, but it is unfortunate.
And he charges more for his signature than anybody, I believe.
Yeah, well, he's a legend, and, you know, if you don't want to pay for a signature, you can choose not to do that. But bottom line is, Statistics alone, the hit king at bats, doubles, and underrated as a fielder. He played most positions. And his charisma, again, not necessarily the most likable guy, but he had great charisma. It's unfortunate that I believe it would be a Veterans Committee election once he passes and some adjustments are made in his eligibility. Sorry to say that, but I would probably have to agree with you, Ron. Well, one thing Ron and I can agree is this show flies by. My mama always also used to say that time flies when you're having fun, which it certainly does. We've talked about some good topics, the little bit about the impeachment, about the coming up caucuses that are coming up, primaries that are coming up, touched on the sensitive and controversial transgender issue, and even talked about the sport we both love, baseball. Looking forward to spring training. Will spring training end up further taking away some attention from the goings-on in Washington? Well, I guess we'll find out. But until we talk again, Ron, and we're going to talk next time, right around the same time that the same week that people in Iowa will be going to the caucus meetings, I will bid you a fair adieu and thank you again for being with us on.
Thank you so much again for
the Talking
Place.
WWGH 107.1 FM on your radio dial and WWGH1071.com. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Adam at WWGH1071.com. And be sure to visit Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com.